Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nation Building Movement Presents. And I am so happy to be here this morning with our distinguished panel and co-host, Brother Gene Gordon out of St. Louis, Missouri, and his distinguished guest, of course. But I want to welcome you this morning to Citizen Land Development Cooperative, what it is and what it is not. And I want to see if our brother Gene Gordon is on the line this morning. Good morning, Brother Gene.
Good morning, Queen. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. It's good to hear your voice this morning. And also we have with us the Executive Director of Communications with the Center of Economic and Social Justice, Ms. Dawn Brohan. Ms. Dawn, are you here this morning with us?
I sure am, Queen. It's delightful to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us this morning. And we also have a... We don't have friends of the show. We have a family member of one of the original broadcasts, No Romance Without Finance host, Brother Vernon Muhammad. Are you there with us this morning, Vernon? Brother Vernon? Okay, I see he's on the line, but we can't hear him yet. Vernon, are you there? Okay, well, he'll be on eventually, but I know he's connected. Okay, so this morning, like our previous show, our intro show, this is a pre-recorded broadcast. This broadcast is intended for people to obtain information, to learn about the descendants of American slaves for economic and social justice, better known as DAS for ESJ. That's DAS number 4 ESJ.org, which is our website, which I would certainly invite you to go and explore and to learn more. So right now, I'm going to turn it over to the Executive Director of the Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice, Brother Gene Gordon.
Good morning, everybody. I'm just going to be covering what Citizen Land Development Co-op, what it's all about, and what it is and what it's not. Recently here in the state of Missouri, back on June 1st, we had a Republican Governor, Mike Parson, who signed into law the Citizen Land Development Co-op, which is HB 2400/Senate Bill 772. And mind you, that has never been done in the history of America or the world. It's the first bill that will give citizens equal voting share rights on their community, on land, infrastructure, and so forth. What we normally see that happens in the urban communities, and I assume some rural areas, is that you see development goes on, you know, within your community, and the three questions we failed to ask is that who pays for it, who owns it, who controls it. And usually whoever pays for it is the one that controls it. But what happens in the urban neighborhoods and communities that are really much, you know, poverty-stricken areas is that you have things, you know, development going on by nonprofit organizations, and things like that. You have outside investors coming in, investing in our community without even involving the citizens of what their wants and needs are within their community. Trump passed legislation about, opportunity zones. You have all that. But the question is, where do the citizens fit in at? Does the citizens have ownership of what takes place in their community? And the Citizen Land Development Co-op is a way and a vehicle that will link ordinary people, all citizens, through land and technology. Citizen Land Development Co-op, as I said, each citizen will get an equal voting share of infrastructure and so forth. But the Citizen Land Development Co-op is where it can also be utilized in rural areas along with urban, and this is something that we have to get into the Native American reservation. You know, if you go up on the reservations of Native Americans, it's pretty much poverty and a lot of other elements that are affecting the Native Americans' reservation. But Citizens Land Development Co-op, it's a for-profit, professional managed, citizen-owned and governed community land planning and development enterprise. It is designed to enable every citizen of a community of any size to acquire a direct ownership stake in the local land, natural resources, and basic infrastructure. It's a social vehicle for every man, woman, and child to gain as a fundamental human right of citizenship, a single lifetime, non-transferable ownership interest in all the bank's assets, very equally in property income from rentals and user fees from land leases. Let's say with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, the citizens own the land, and they will get dividend payouts from the land leases. Our idea for the Citizen Land Development Co-op here in the city of St. Louis, which the law has just passed, we're going to try to attract corporations, and preferably we set up an ESOP corporation, employee stock ownership company, that where the employees own, you know, shares within the corporation, and try to attract them back into the city of St. Louis, which was once a pretty good, thriving industrial city. Well, to do that, to attract corporations, you have to have a landscape that is attractable. And what right now, what's happening in our city, we see poverty, you know, and just straight out conflict with our community. And we feel that the Citizen Land Development Co-op is a way to bring hope back to the people of the community. It's an innovative legal and financing tool empowered to borrow on the behalf of all citizen shareholders and service the debt with pre-tax dollars to meet the land acquisition, capitalization, and operation needs of the bank. A Citizen Land Development Co-op, as I said, it is where the citizens have equal ownership into the development of their community. What it's not a socialist or communist, you know, vehicle. It's not the Wall Street model of capitalism. It's not the nonprofit community investment corporation. And we see a lot of that within our community, nonprofit community investment corporation. And I was just watching a video where it went on in Baltimore, Maryland, and the residents were like, you know, Community Investment Corporation, you know, we own it. And the reason they say that we own it is because the community, it's through a nonprofit, and, you know, nonprofits are per se owned by the community. But the individual citizen does not have an equal voting share right of their community and what goes on in their community. It's not a land monopoly owned or controlled by a small elite or local outside investors. And that's what we have coming into the urban city. We have gentrification is the name for it. And Citizen Land Development Co-op is a way to, you know, put a halt to gentrification. It's not an amateur, unstructured approach to land development or management by committee. It's not a vehicle for owning or financing local enterprises competing in the marketplace. The benefits of a Citizen Land Development Cooperative, it's a cooperative with people, a group of people, not just one individual, not just one organization, not just a few at the top owning at the expense of many. It provides a private sector means by which homes, enterprises, rental spaces, and technology built upon the Citizen Land Development Co-op owned land can be broadly owned by workers and other local shareholders. It generates a new source of taxable income from new and expanded private sector jobs and ownership stakes. It empowers each citizen and family with the means to build on an adequate and secure income. And with real voice in the development, the citizens will have real voice in the development, the planning stages, and the development. You know, that's important, you know, where you as a citizen will have, you know, a voice in the planning, the designing of what you need in your community. It provides every citizen with income to contribute to the cost of running an effective local government and providing essential public service as well as for his or her own well-being. It offers hope and eventually eliminated dependency of any citizen on welfare and charity and other or fear of technological displacement. Is there any questions?
Yes, I have a question, Brother Dean, but I will also want to yield to Brother Vernon. Brother Vernon, are you there?
I am here now.
Okay. All right. So, yes, sir, we can hear you. And I just wanted to see if you had any questions about anything that you heard Brother Gene say.
Well, I literally came on in the middle of him speaking, so I'm catching up. That was a lot of information, and I thank you, Brother Gene, for laying that out. I'm looking forward to the discussion and hearing more about the cooperative.
Okay.
And also, I will also forward you the printout that Brother Gene provided for us in an email, Brother Vernon. But I just want to ask a simple question, Brother Gene, and that is, and I know you kind of laid it out, but I want you to expound a little further. How does the average working man and woman participate in the CLDC, and what will be required of them?
Well, all I have to do is be a citizen, a resident of the community. There's no way. Just be a permanent resident of that community, and they will get an equal voting share right of the development. Here's something we have to – why the Citizen Land Development Co-op? Why do we need a Citizen Land Development Co-op in our community? Because, as I stated earlier, you know, we have outside investors coming in poor communities and pretty much putting things in the community that's probably not needed and not wanted. And we can't go on living vicariously seeing new buildings go up in our communities and we not have no parts of it. I mean, just seeing buildings, yeah, we have vacant lots in the city of St. Louis and therefore, but you know, as I said, the number three questions we must begin to ask, who pays for it, who owns it, who controls it? It's time for us to really take some control of what happens in our community. But you're asking the question is, a citizen, there's no investment. You know, and that's another thing why, you know, here in the city of St. Louis, we have over 35,000 vacant properties, and it's the same way in Detroit, you know, Cleveland, all over the country in urban and rural areas. It's just, it's like a desert. You know, the only thing they have is general store. And our community here in St. Louis has become a food desert, but you don't have to invest. It's not based on past savings. And everyone, and from the poorest to the poorest, wants to be an owner. And we must start looking at the problem. Why do we have, you know, drugs in our neighborhood? Why do we have, you know, high crime rates? 70%, 75% of youth from 12 to 18, 78% are involved in criminal activity. That's because they want power. They want property. They want to be an owner. I mean, that's the only way they get involved in that. But no, you don't have to. It doesn't require no investment based on past savings. You know, a lot of people in the community would like to own property, Well, this will give them the opportunity to do so, and it's not based on how much money they have, the credibility, and things like that. Every man, woman, and child will have an equal voting share right of their community development.
Okay. And I want to yield to Don right now. Don, did you have anything you wanted to add or anything you want to ask?
Sure. Yes, you know, I just wanted to thank Jean for that. Was a very in-depth, informative overview of the Citizens Land Development Cooperative and what it means to a community and the people in the community, every child, woman, and man. And one of the key ideas that Jean was introducing in this is how do people who have no assets become owners of income-producing capital. And this idea of the Citizen Land Development Cooperative is really just one mechanism in a bigger idea, which is an alternative to monopolistic capitalism and redistributive socialism. And we call it the just third way of economic personalism. The idea there is that all of our social systems, laws, institutions must start from the standpoint of each person in terms of each individual's dignity and empowerment and full development and freedom, which is not the way the system is set up right now. It's either going to be the government controlling in one way or another or a few wealthy, powerful people. So this is based on free market principles of private property, meaning the rights that an owner has in what they own, the right to the fruits, and the right to control. So when we talk about having a share in the Citizens Land Development Cooperative, we are talking about share ownership. So each person has an identifiable ownership stake in this cooperative that it's dealing with how land and infrastructure will be developed in a community. And the idea is to tie every person, even children, to the processes of growth so that they're not victims, but they are controllers of the development that takes place. Now, children, of course, can't make decisions for a while, but they can, through their parents, be part of the control, the decision-making and control and accountability processes, but also they can be receiving a share of profits from the leasing of land. And the idea is that the Citizens Land Cooperative owns, that becomes the ownership vehicle. It owns and acquires land, and it plans and it develops the land and infrastructure. The question is, you know, who owns the cooperative? And in this case, it's every permanent resident within a geographically determined area. So that can include urban, rural, Native American lands, whatever, you know, the group decides it will be covering. So then the question then is, well, okay, how does the cooperative acquire its land? And we would start with government-owned land, whether it's local or state or even federal, if you can manage to get the government entity to transfer free the land that it now owns to the citizen-owned CLDC, and it will take over the function of doing the planning and the investing to make the area more attractive to businesses to come in and create jobs and even more, well, and also, in addition to jobs, as Jean was saying, we would want to encourage employee-owned companies. For example, ESOP companies, that means Employee Stock Ownership Plan, or worker-owned co-ops to locate on the land. So you keep building this idea of an ownership culture. Now, as I was mentioning, that the CLDC is just one instrument in a philosophy that I had mentioned was the just third way of economic personalism. And in order to make this real, you have to have policies in place and you have to have institutions ready to provide, and this is very important, the money for future development. So this in this national legislation called the Economic Democracy Act, this would make it possible to finance out of future profits, this profits generated by the future goods and services that will be created and sold. And that is what provides the flow of financing for people to become owners of new capital, not requiring them to have already saved and accumulated and cut their consumption in order to save, using their past savings as the mode of investment. Because most people, realistically, there are not many people who could save enough to invest in productive assets that would enable them, if they were unable to work, to be able to still earn a livable income from their ownership. So we're really looking at a world, you know, that will take time, where people can accumulate in a more intelligent way, more efficient and more just way, the capital tools that are quite, you know, honestly are replacing a lot of forms of human labor. So this is tying into the notion of power for each person, property, meaning property rights, specifically in capital for each person, and then access to the money and the credit that will make it possible for them to acquire productive assets that pay for themselves out of their future profits. So all this is, we're throwing a whole lot of information. We're throwing what we would call a paradigm at you right now. So that to give you an idea of how big this, what just happened in Missouri, how important this is. It is the first step to demonstrate how this whole new system can work to the benefit of each person. So I'll leave it at that, and I think we'll just take your questions. That's probably the best way to impart this information.
Yeah.
And Brother Vernon has a question. Brother Vernon?
Yes. This is probably a multi-part question that will just feed into the discussion. So I love what I heard so far. I did hear, and please forgive me if I don't have the acronyms right just yet, CODC, that is Citizen Owned Development Corporation. Am I correct in that?
It would be CLDC, which stands for Citizens Land Development Cooperative. And it's been a number of different labels we've had for it. It was something that came out of an idea developed by a corporate finance lawyer, Louis Kelso, who is also someone who conceived of this, the big idea, but also developed the idea of employee stock ownership plans, which you may be familiar with. And this was, I think, in the early 1970s, there was a proposal for New England that involved something called, this was a for-profit community investment corporation. And since then, that CIC has become a nonprofit land trust kind of concept. But yeah, so don't worry too much about the acronym because it keeps on changing.
Gotcha. You all were saying it, but it's coming through very fast and it's coming through not clear. And I want to make sure that the audience understand what's being said. But my question is, I love what I got from all that was said was the idea that there would be an increased ownership and control over the resources in the communities where citizens live. And that, to me, sounds like a very good thing. I think that would sound like a very good thing for most people. My question is, question 1A is this something that can only be applicable in the Midwest or in certain parts of the country, or is any municipality open to this? And question 1B is, what is the average citizen in any city, USA, what does it look like for them to get involved? You said, you know, you don't have to have past savings. Okay, what do you have to have? What do you
you have to do.
Yeah, well, one question, it can be, and that's what we want to do. We want this to be replicated in all cities of America, all cities of America, and get passed by the state in all states in America. It can be replicated, and that's the idea, and that's what we want to do. And then in turn, that will give us more leverage on getting the federal legislation passed, which is the Economic Democracy Act. So now what does a person have to do to get involved? Was your question 1B?
Yes, that's correct. What does that look like? What is the activity that a person who says, I want to get involved, what would that person be doing to make this, you know, real in their part?
The only suggestion I can have, Vernon, is start, you know, where first we have to start educating, you know, educating community, ordinary citizens. If you want to get something like the Citizen Land Development Cooperative up and going in, let's say, Washington, D.C., you pretty much get a copy of the legislation, see what it looks like, and work closely with DOSRI-ESJ along with TESJ on how we can go out, you know, put a strategy plan together on how to go out and start really communicating it with the citizens, find a state representative or sending them. We'll get together, put a packet together if you want to send it to your state legislators, your city councilman, your city, your congresswoman, you know, even your Senate, you know, we'll work together with you on getting that. But, yeah, anybody can get involved. And hopefully there was a gentleman that Don Brohan and Norm Carroll, who's the architect of the Citizen Land Development Co-op, they live right outside of Washington in Arlington, Virginia. And, in fact, somebody came to Norm's and Norm's office out of Washington, D.C. He was a descendant of slave. He's from Washington, D.C., and he wanted to get involved. So if you want to get involved with DOSRI-ESJ and what we're doing, then, you know, we can work with you on how to go about it. It's an easy process. Just educate. That's the number one thing we have to do is educate people and the state. Introduce the legislation to state representative, you know, city councilman. You're going to find somebody who wants to spearhead this thing, especially when they know that if the law was just passed here in the state of Missouri by a Republican governor. But I want to piggyback on something where, you know, Dawn was mentioning how the idea is to acquire the land that the city owns or the federal government owns. The question is, why would they want to do that? Because it's a heavy burden on the taxpayer and the city government to maintain these derelict properties, these vacant lots. You know, we pay in St. Louis, we pay a 2% as a city of St. Louis resident, we pay a 2% earning tax. That's for the upkeep of these properties, and it's a tremendous burden on the taxpayers. And it's called the Land Reutilization Authority, but in all actuality, what it is, it's a city land bank where the city, these are city-owned properties that people have, they've got from people not paying the back taxes on it. And keeping in mind, we got 35,000 of them here in the city of St. Louis. So it would be to their best interest to, you know, transfer the property over to the Citizen Land Development Co-op. And what most city governments are doing, they hold on to the property, they sell it. You know, you can buy a building here for $1,500, $2,000. But it's going to take you $90,000 to bring it up to code and make it livable. Well, how many of us have that past savings? And Dawn was talking about many of us, 60% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings account. Those are the actual numbers. And it probably 85 to 90% of descendants of American slaves to have less than $1,000 in their savings account. So this is a way of really bringing ownership into, you know, average citizens who always wanted to be owners, you know, of property and things like that. And let me just, I just want to quote Article 17 of the Declaration of Human Rights that was written, I think, in 1946. It said, every person has the right to own property with themselves and with the association with others. Property. But we have to be educated. What is property? Property is not the thing. It what the thing produces and the rights and the fruits of what the thing produces. That's power. That's property.
I thought,
to answer your question.
Look, perhaps I could add some more to what Gene was saying, because it's obviously very complex, and it takes time to change a system or to change, you know, an environment at a city level or national or global level. But the key, I think, to getting the process started is for citizens to be educated about what this possibility is. And so that's, Gene is, I think, referring to really the stage before the CLDC gets implemented and gets operational. And that's critical, because you need leadership who is absolutely committed to the vision, because it's going to be very easy to slide into the old habits and the old patterns where, you know, a few people who have a lot of money will end up, you know, acquiring it and owning it just as they do today. So you have the education that can start immediately. You need the legislation, because you have to have the laws supporting this vehicle, so it can do a number of things that are essential. And just to give you an idea of what this relates to in terms of where the money comes from, this idea, this larger idea of how every person can become an owner of capital, really was first demonstrated with the Employee Stock Ownership Plan. And this was first demonstrated without the laws being in place in 1956, where Louis Kelso helped this newspaper chain help the employees buy it out. And his idea was, well, the rich, you know, they don't use their own money. They really use other people's money, or they use loans. Their own savings are really there just to stand behind a loan, as, you know, with the word collateral. And with this approach that he used, the workers set up a trust, the Employee Stock Ownership Trust, and that was what was able to borrow money. And then this was the trust that the company was able to contribute shares, and the trust was borrowing, and the trust paid the company to buy the shares. So gradually over time, whoever owned the shares before, they've now sold it to the employees. And how did the employees pay for it? They paid for it with the profits of the company. So no individual is on the hook here, and you can't touch their personal assets. You won't lose your home if the company goes under. So this becomes a new way of how people can finance growth, you know, the business growth, but also expand the number of owners simultaneously. So the idea of using credit, and in this case we're talking about insured capital credit, no interest loans, how do you acquire that? And this is key. It's done through the existing commercial banking system with access to account window of every regional Federal Reserve Bank, which has the law since 1913 to be able to create money to meet the needs of productive businesses, whether it's agricultural, industrial, commercial, or whatever. As long as those businesses have a feasible business plan saying, okay, if you loan me this money, I'm going to buy these capital tools, and I know that I have, or our company knows that we have a market for our product, And we even may have contracts of customers ready to buy our products if we can create more. So if you loan this money to our company, we'll invest in the robots or whatever. This will create a greater stream of products that we'll sell. And from the future profits, we will use those initially to pay off the loan. And after that continuing profit stream will go to the owners. So now what we're doing is we're just including for every citizen, no matter how rich or how poor, to have an equal opportunity to access that stream of newly created money. This must be always backed by assets, meaning the future goods and services that will be produced. So you have to have a pretty good projection or expectation that it's going to be a good investment, and there'll be ways to determine that. You'll have different entities that will be vetting each of these business projects before a loan will be made through a commercial bank or banks, insured through insurance companies, and then presented to the regional Federal Reserve to create the new money and credits. And then once the loan is paid off, the money is canceled, so you avoid inflation in the system. So that's sort of the mechanism for doing this. So with the to answer Vernon's question, how would an ordinary citizen, you know, actually start to take part in this whole process of development and earning profits and having a voice? And that's where it goes from the big picture with the macro level to the enterprise level, the micro level, which in this case is the Citizens Land Development Cooperative. So it will have professional management that will be hired through the board of directors who will be voted on by the citizens. So the citizens are going to need to have an account set up. And this is, so you would want to have people go out in the community and, let people know that this opportunity is now there. It's not going to cost them a penny, but it's important that they and their family members all sign up for this. So each person would have their own account. This is one share. We're setting this up as a cooperative rather than with multiple shares. One non-transferable lifetime voting dividend paying share that you have to be a permanent resident in the community. If you leave the community, you lose your share. If you die, you lose your share. You can't sell your share to anyone else. It's sort of with you. So once you have your account, then as the CLDC, now it's operating as a business, a for-profit business, it will first get as much land transferred free from local and state governments that see, okay, we're going to still get taxes. I mean, the state will be able to collect taxes, but it just won't be managing, with the kind of professionalism you really need and the local connection that you need. So the CLDC will get this land transferred, and then it needs money to actually do this development. Okay, it's, for example, you got abandoned properties. What are you going to do with it? That's going to cost money. So that's where you want to bring in the most advanced types of new industries that would want to locate on that land and hire people and be also be willing to sell shares in those companies to employees and to residents, but based on this new way of investing. So this is creating an ecosystem of shared ownership and shared responsibility and shared control. So all of this is going to, it's not going to be perfection. It's going to take time. There'll be a lot of, new ways of doing this, depending on who the participants are, meaning who is the community being served. So this is really, I think, if you understand the basic principles, which Vernon, you stated it exactly, that this is how you increase or how you spread out ownership and control to every person. If once you understand that and see how money fits into this, that it's we're moving away from the concept of, you know, past accumulations of savings, which most people don't have, to the idea of what we call future savings, which just means that when you produce and sell your products, you're going to hopefully generate profits, and it's those profits in the future that are used to pay off loans that will become the means by which every person from the day they're born to the day they die can become participants in owning the new capital that will be creating more and more goods and services.
Okay, and I would like to also, you know, bring this home and make this more real for people. And I know this was not intentional for Brother Gene, but I also, I want to let people know that this is feasible to do, that it does take educating the community. It does take galvanizing people, but this has been done before. This is the same thing that Dr. Martin Luther King did in the Civil Rights Movement. So with the level of education that all people have today that they didn't have 50 years ago, this is very feasible to do. And I think to bring that point home and to make it realistic for everybody, Gene, I'm going to ask you to just give us a few pointers on what you did to get this legislation passed in St. Louis, because Gene is a man who has grew up in St. Louis, who has worked in the community, and it's not a put down, but he doesn't necessarily have a formal education or a series of degrees or anything like that. He just had it. He had the heart to want to see his community, his people, other people free of the system that has enslaved us all. And Gene, if you would, please just give us a few minutes on how you actually brought this into fruition.
Well, I'm born and raised in St. Louis, born and raised in the city, North Side. And I currently, you know, own, bought some city land property from the city, but I always, you know, I ride through neighborhoods, you know, south of Del Mar, where the rich, affluent neighborhoods are, and I come over north of Del Mar, and I'm looking at vacant lots, you know, derelict buildings, you know, trash, and I'm like, is there a way? There's got to be a way that we can, you know, turn our community, you know, better the landscape of our community. But it was not based on what I as an individual can do, because one individual can do so much. And I said, there's got to be a way that we can, you know, in the city of St. Louis, we don't have, you know, ordinary things. We don't have a Starbucks. We don't have a Target. We don't have, you know, just ordinary things you see. We don't have nowhere to go for family entertainment. We don't have movie theaters. We don't have, you don't even have a place where you can just go and get some air in your tire in the city of St. Louis. So, you know, I wasn't looking out for self. It wasn't about self. I'm like, what can we do to, you know, lift up the hope of the people? I mean, you have to put yourself in the poorest of the poorest, the homeless. Just put yourself in their shoes for a minute, you know. And they look at the landscape. I mean, the scriptures, I don't mean to go into, you know, spirituality of it, but the scriptures said where there's no vision, the people will perish. And that's exactly what happened. So I was always used to ride through the city, and man, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way. You know, government and politicians just aren't seeing it. And then I was introduced to Dr. Norm Carroll and the CESJ, and, you know, I went on their website, and when I saw that, you know, ordinary people who come from where I come from can have an opportunity to own land and infrastructure. I was like, what? This is it. So, you know, as you know, talking with Norm Carolyn day in, day out, you know, and learning about the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, and I always was aware of cooperatives because as a driver, I used to deliver to a cooperative organic egg distributor in California, and it was set up as a like an ESOP. But when I learned these ideas, I said, man, this is it. So, you know, I got involved and started studying, and it all made sense. I mean, here you're talking to somebody that doesn't have any letters behind his name, a secondary education, and saw something that can really change the lives of people. So I went to work. I came back to St. Louis in 2019, started up DOSBY ESJ, and I began to put packets together, the Citizen Land Development Co-op, and sending it out to state legislators, just as I was, you know, suggesting to burn it. You know, I put together 10 or 12 packets and send them out to them, you know, and hope to get a response. And I sent 10 out, and I got one response, and that was from Senator Carla May. And, you know, the way I struck a conversation up with him in my cover letter, because I remember Senator Carla May, when she co-hosts a radio show, and she said, we need a new paradigm. And why did she say that? Let me hear it. You know, she said, we need a new paradigm. We need a way to break the chain. There was a gospel song that she loved to play on the radio. It's called Breaking the Chain. And I geared my cover letter around her comments. And when she reached out to us, we set up a Zoom meeting and we got on the Zoom call. And, you know, I told my colleagues, Norm and Dawn, I said, Dawn, you know, Norm, you know, when we give a presentation, I don't want to have to ask, you know, the person, do they want to get involved. At the end of the presentation, we got to give a dynamic presentation to where at the end of the presentation, I want that person to say, how can I get involved? What's the next step? And those was exact Carla May's words. She said, okay, I'm in. What's the next step? And the thing that she loved about it, the thing that she said she liked about it, was the fact that everybody can become an owner. The poorest of the poorest, that woman out there in the street that's prostituting herself, that man out there in the street homeless, have a drug addiction, even then, we're not going to judge you about where you come from, what life you live, what color you are. You know, we're not going to judge you by that. Everybody. Of course, those people in those conditions will have to have a trustee over their account, you know, to manage them and manage it. But every person will have equal access opportunities. And that's what we need in America. I mean, this new paradigm, I mean, if you look at what's going on up in Washington, if you look at, you know, interest rates on the rise, the Fed just had a meeting just yesterday, talking about they're going to raise interest rate, you know, inflation, you know, I listened to them, you know. We got inflation because they're printing money out of thin air that's not backed by any production or any assets. When you do that, that causes inflation. And you mentioned the key word, you say feasibility. Yes, there's feasibility in this project. You know, and that's one of them, is that it's backed by insurance and capital credit insurance. It's, you may ask, why would the government do that? Well, the government is doing it anyway. They have reinsurance, FHA mortgage. It's backed up by what you call a reinsurance. It's backed up by Freddie Mac, or whatever the name is. That's a reinsurance. So the government Yeah, and they're printing money, but they're printing money that's not backed up by any assets. In this, you're creating money, and it's backed by real assets. But, you know, when I learned of this, I said, when I first saw it, I said, I got to get this to people because we are so distracted today and we're not paying attention to what's really going on behind closed doors. And, you know, as I see things today, you know, we go on in life as if it don't even affect us, when in all actuality it affects us tremendously. And, you know, I just felt that I had to get it out. I mean, introducing it to politicians and, you know, who are pretty much conventional thinkers, we got to get out of that. And one question I want to ask, why, when it comes to the descendants of American slaves, any project that goes on or any development that we do, it always has to involve government funding. And people don't realize when you do that, you got to look at, you're just increasing the debt. That's all you're doing. You know, like through government subsidies and government, you know, funding, you're just increasing the debt. So we got to get away from that conventional way of thinking. Did I answer your question?
Well, yeah, I wanted you to tell people how you actually, you know, birthed this thing, because I don't want people to feel as though this is too complicated, that it's impossible, that I got to have all this money or I got to have all these letters behind my name. I want people to know that this is doable. All you have to have is the desire. All you have to have is the willingness to get this understanding and then take it out to the community in which you live, because this is not just a St. Louis, Missouri project. This is an American project, which is inclusive of everyone, whether you're black, you're white, you're Native American, you're you know, you are immigrant that just got a citizenship, no matter who you are in this country, this is for everyone. And the only way that we're actually going to make this happen is that it has to be a demand. And people also have to get out of the conventional thinking that government runs America. Government has ran America into the ground. The deficit of America is tremendous. And what does that do to your children now, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren in the future? So therefore, how do we stop it? We stop it like we've stopped many other things before, and that is by coming together, making a demand from the people to the government that we have allowed to govern us and say, this has to change. We're introducing a new paradigm, because the economic system that exists today is not conducive for the way that American people desire to live. And I would want to, and I say this all the time, especially the Native American people, when you go on a reservation, people who once owned this land, and for millions of them that lived on this land, to be reduced down to a reservation that I would not even let my dog live on. There are no schools. There are no hospitals. There's no industry. There's nothing there. They're clay homes. People are dying. They don't even have decent police. The FBI don't investigate crimes there that happened on the reservation. There have been over 400 missing women in the last 5 years to disappear from reservations. That is a sex trafficking hotspot. Because when a Native American woman comes up missing, you think it's bad for black women. When a Native American comes up missing, no one investigates. These people have to beg and plead and make a lot of noise to get someone to investigate what happened to their children. And that is not fair to them after they have pillage and ravage this land from the original owner, that they would have to live in the misery of not knowing what happened to their children.
Yeah,
and that is not right.
Yeah, and to ask your question, how do people, get involved? It's just not a St. Louis thing. It's just as Fannie Lou Hamer said, when are you going to get sick and tired of being sick and tired? And it's going to take someone with an independent mindset, independent thinking. We got to get out of the way of what we've been conditioned to understand. Academia has failed. It's academia fault on the way that we're taught. But we have can always say you can't be liberated by a system until you understand the system. So with DOTS, BESJ, and CSJ, there is no other, and I don't say this, I say it because I truly believe there's no other organization out there that's really educating people, ordinary people, educating them on the system, the economic system, the social system, the social institutions that make up the social order. We have got to begin, and we can't wait, we can't wait. We have to do it now. We have to begin to understand how economics and social systems are in place. And then we have to look at the cost of something, what it costs. There was a tremendous cost in setting up redlining and Jim Crow laws and black codes. That was a cost involved in that. And today, racism, there is a cost. I mean, racism in America, according to the Federal Reserve President, cost this country $16 trillion in the last 4 years. Racism. I mean, this is a way to begin to end poverty. I mean, if you think about the ordinary person out there living, and I'm seeing more and more and more young people are homeless and in poverty than ever before. Just the other day, I ran into three at 6 o'clock in the morning, 20 and 22 years old. Why is this condition? We have to change the monetary policies. We have to change the system. Capitalism is a feeder of racism. I'm going to say it again. Capitalism is a feeder of racism because it's the lack of knowledge of knowing who we are and where we come from. It is a way that people can benefit on others' lack of opportunity. All this is very close connected. Capitalism, why, as Dawn was saying earlier, wealth is so concentrated in America. But when I saw this, and starting up DOTS, as I said, I kind of thank God I didn't go. I'm none to those who went to universities and college and got degrees, but I thank God I didn't go. The most, if you go and study some of the most successful people in business and organization, they were self-educated. And this is something is outside the box. We got to start thinking outside the box, We talk about, we teach financial literacy, but all of that, not putting or being, condemning them, but financial literacy, we have to educate them because they're teaching on the old paradigm, get your credit score up. All that's based around consumer credit, but 70% of the wealthiest, 70% of their income comes from productive assets. So we have to get beyond consumerism and get involved in the producer of goods and services. I don't care what your credit score is. They're going to find you financing for a vehicle. They'll find you financing for a home. All you have to do is have a 620 credit score. But if they can do that for consumer items, lobby them, they can do it to get capital ownership into the hands of every American. They can do it. I mean, the problem is that wealth and capital incomes are not distributed evenly. The average wealth of the bottom half, the average wealth of the bottom half is $349. For the top 1%, it's over $16 trillion. How are we going to even begin to close the wealth gap if we're still looking at consumer goods, things we eat, things we consume? No. We have got to start looking at capital ownership. You know, and looking at capital ownership and getting capital into the hands of every citizen. And we also have, Vernon, I want to tell you, we also have a program that's very educational. I think everybody should attend Justice University. In the curriculum of Justice University, we teach what is justice, what is social justice. People don't even know what social justice is. And the best way I can describe it and keeping it simple is exactly what the Civil Rights Movement did. They, people coming together, gaining people power to change policies and systems that have been set up as barriers from keeping people from, you know, reaching their full potential. But Justice University is a curriculum where we teach what is money, what is property, what is justice. When you ask the average person out here what is justice, they only think of justice being, you know, criminal or the rule of law. No, that's not particularly what it all is about. Justice is just the way, it's like we were taught. It's a way of life. It should become a way of life. But Justice University, they teach that. So what is social justice? Like I say, and we're at the point now where we're trying to put together where it can be taught at a community level, and that should be coming soon. Dawn, you got anything you want to add?
No, I've just been so impressed, Gene, with your story and, you know, what Queen was saying, that this is something that's, you know, really connects with every person. But I think it's so important that both of you were looking to, you know, recognize how everyone, you know, the people who are really at the bottom of the social ladder right now, that
yeah.
we have to have systems that address and empower them. So until our systems are designed to do that, then they are not socially just. And, you know, I think one important thing that Quinn had mentioned was that there has to be a demand from the people to the government for this kind of system change. And it's, you know, reminds me of a quote, and I'm forgetting who said it, but it's basically that, you know, freedom is not something given to you. You must demand it. And I think it may have even been Frederick Douglass who said that. But I think the point here is, you know, when we talk about social justice, it's really important, I think, for people to be clear on what that means, because it's often been taken by many people to mean socialism, and that's not what it is. But it really forces us to look at the laws and the institutions, like our money system, our tax system, our institutions, how they either help us develop, give us opportunity, or that we have the opportunity to use those social tools for us to, each of us, to become more free and more fully human. We have to understand that all these things, they're human creations, they're human tools. And, you know, I don't think we mentioned that Norm Curlin happens to be my father. So, and so this idea we've been talking about is something I've grown up with for most of my life and have been working with since I graduated from college. But I have to say that Gene Gordon understands this paradigm better than, I would say, 99.9% of the PhDs and lawyers and bankers, you know, that I've come across, and including the ones who you read their opinions or you hear them on TV. And, you know, as Jane was saying, we're stuck in an old system that is never, even with the best of intentions, it is not going to close the gap in wealth and income and opportunity. So here is something which, I think Queen really appreciates the need for organizing people around these new ideas to change the system. We own the system, or we should own the system. It's up to us to make sure it's set up so that each of us really is able to benefit from it. And what that takes, as Jean and Queen were saying, is people organizing with it, you know, understanding what they're organizing for and focusing on what needs to be changed in the system. And in this case, when we talk about economics, we want to move away from just looking at, you know, how do we get more jobs or how do we increase social benefits, you know, the government will pay to us. And by the way, anytime someone talks about the government paying or giving you money, that's the taxpayers. That's where it's coming from. It's from individuals who are producing and earning incomes. That's where the money's coming from. So we got to move away from that to how can each person become economically independent and self-sufficient? Because part of this is the bigger vision. You know, looking to the future, we're contending with, you know, new capital tools and new, you know, ways of producing that is, you know, they're going to make the need for human beings much and much less needed. And so if we are in a system where, you know, the majority of us, we need to have a job to be able to pay our bills and just to pay our bills, then think of in terms of human freedom and the potential, human potential that's lost because everyone is struggling, you know, just to feed themselves and have some kind of roof over their heads, you know, let alone going to college and, you know, pursuing higher education. That's not going to happen in a wage welfare system. It just is not. You're going to just keep spreading things to fewer, you know, more and more people without producing more. And, you know, this is also, Jean was saying, this will help address the problems of poverty and racism and war, but also environmental destruction. Because we better figure out better systems, you know, energy systems and how we grow our food, how we transport ourselves, you know, in a way that doesn't destroy the earth, because frankly, if we destroy the earth, we're not going to be around after that. So yeah. This is survival, but not just survival. It's the potential for having a world where every person has enough of their own that it meets their, you know, their economic needs, but frees them to do, as Norm, my father says, to do the work they would love to do, you know, even if it's for free. So, you know, I think Justice University, that's the way we're trying to organize to teach these ideas. And so we need the help of, you know, people like Queen, and we have people in our network who are teachers. We need to get these ideas into the university, into the schools at all levels. So, you know, it's a big change.
And then if Brendan, if you go back and, you know, look at with the George Floyd and Mike Brown and Breonna Taylor, you know, and it just takes me back. They talk a good job when you have a problem in front of them. And, you know, I can take you back to where the Atlanta Fed made a statement, the Dallas Fed made a statement. But, you know, they talk about the inequality in America. But one thing they fail to do, and I have to tell them, if you care about inequality, you must confront capital. Capital. If you care about inequality, if you're not talking about capital, then you're not really wanting to solve the problem of inequality. And as I stated earlier before, 70% of the wealthiest income come from producing capital. So if you're not trying to figure out a way, which we are, we've got a way to get capital ownership into the hands of each and every citizen. You would never close this racial wealth gap if you're just basing it on wage. That's all you hear from the politicians. Job creation. They just passed this, Biden just did this thing with student debt, you know, and if you look at it, you know, is it really going to help them? Yeah, $20,000, $10,000 here. And then, but just think about the students who are going to college, getting a degree, and when they get out, they're strapped with student debt but can't even get a job in the field in which they got the degree in. There was a gentleman at my former employer. He went to school for sales and marketing, and he's got a business degree. But he's sitting in the office dispatching trucks. You know, that's what we're faced up against, you know. And there's not going to be any jobs, you know, because innovation and technology and robotics is replacing human labor. So, you know, that's why I feel it's an urgency that we get this information out to people, and particularly in the DOS community, get this information out and begin to educate people on what's really going on and how we can change the system, and particularly the monetary policy. Nobody's talking about the monetary system. I mean, of course, those up in higher levels, they know what's going on. They know what it's all about. But they're not sharing it with us, and they're not letting us know, you know, it's, you know, jobs. You know, 90%+ of the people hate their jobs. They hate going to their jobs. They do it because they have to do it. Why not do it because you love to do it? You know, they're talking about universal basic income. So when the government is talking about universal income, they have come to realize that a wage income is not enough. You know, we've got an alternative to that. They're talking about universal income or taxing the rich. The rich pay a special tax on capital gains and all that, you know. Well, you've been screaming that for 20 years. You hadn't done it yet, you know, you're just talking it, you know. But with our plan and what we're doing, it don't take anything from those who already own it. You know, we got to get out of redistribution. This is a form of just distributing wealth. You gave us equal access to the vote through the ballot, but you didn't give us equal access to economic power and economic democracy, and that's pretty much what we're trying to do.
And I just want to say, you know, and everybody who knows me, ever listen to my show, they know I'm a revolutionary first. And you have to understand that this 1% of people who own the wealth, it's not necessarily their intention to share the wealth. And I want people to understand, grassroots people to understand that this level of freedom is your God-given right, number one. Number two, it's something that you have to desire, and it's something that you have to demand. So as we talked about Justice University, Justice University can be, how can I put it, translated in a form to where even your high schoolers can understand, because this is where, and even earlier, but this is where we actually need to start, because every child is not going to college. That's not, that's not, you know, in the repertoire of every child, that even if they make it out of high school, because the dropout rate in the inner city is still astronomical. But this is something that will keep them off the streets. that will keep them out of institutions like mine, that will keep them from being 15 years and 10 months old in a federal or state prison. Because in Texas, you can go to prison at 15 years and 10 months of age. So not only is it the responsibility of individuals, but those of us who own businesses, those of us who have a platform, those of us who are clergymen in churches, in mosques, in synagogues, those of us who executive directors are even employees of community centers and places of that nature, anything in your community, this information by the way of internet is available to all people. So there are no excuses. It's not like we're unreachable. It's not like we're untouchable. Go to DAS, D-A-S, number 4, DAS4ESJ.org to get the information on how you can participate, because it's going to take all of us. And I know this is not for everybody, but everybody will benefit. So therefore, it is for everybody. And we have to understand, and I can't drive it home enough, that your demand supersedes what the government desires for you. This plan by design, even right now, and I have to say it, even right now, the American government's playing a dirty game. I'll give you a perfect example. When COVID came out, they offered you all this stimulus, all this SNAP, all this TANF, all this WIC. They offered you all these programs. They cut checks like it was legal. And then they tell you that now inflation is due to COVID and supply and demand because they can't move products. Well, they got products sitting out in the ocean, but they didn't went to the moon 4, 5, 6, 7 times. But you can't move products out the ocean. It makes no sense. People got to wake up. You got that stimulus, you paying it back. That's just what it is. So how do we get out of that?
And you mentioned a key point, you know, product and demand. You know, most of us don't, if you ask the average person, you know, we talk about money, we talk about, you know, financial gain. And if you ask the normal person, what is economics? They can't tell you. But these are the things that we are educating people on. Economics is production and consumption. And you talk about they got products sitting out in the ocean. Well, there's many reasons for that, because consumers don't have money to buy it. And when you don't have money to buy, they're producing more that consumers don't have the money to buy. That causes inflation. So what we're trying to do, you have to have, as Louis Kelso, you have to have a second income plan. There's got to be, you know, wage slave system. You know, they've got jobs that they say they can't fill. Is it that people realize their human potential during COVID when they were sitting at home, and they say, rather me go out here and spend 40 hours, 50 hours slave in a slave factory, I can sit at home and make $300 a day just creating videos and putting them on YouTube. But they realize their human potential that has been buried in the graves of their ignorance. But, you know, another thing is that, is it that they look at their paycheck and see that it's packed with welfare, you know, Social Security, Medicare. You know, you got this, you got state taxes, you got federal taxes, you got a city earnings tax. It's all packed.
in welfare. And yeah, you make $70,000-$80,000 gross a year, but you're only bringing home $60,000 to $40,000. You know, people, is it that people have come to realize that this is a slave system? All we're doing is sharecropping. That's all we're doing. And when you talk about, you said something about capitalism and the rich not wanting to give up, you know, what they have or share what they have. All this is, it's all very close connected to racism. And so many people, they're not willing to give up their positions, to give up their powers, to give up the other people and let other people be free. They're not willing to do that. But one thing they fail to realize, they can't die with all of their wealth. So that's where wealth concentration begins, because when one dies and it passes on to the family, he's getting that same type of mentality. When he dies, it passes on to the family. And Dawn can go into this where within the Economic Democracy Act, it would change some tax laws, including inheritance tax and gift tax, you know, because you have to have the limitation there, you know, where wealth is not just concentrated, you know, within, you know, the top 1%. And she also mentioned about how wealth is pretty much is just concentrated. And she mentioned in the Justice University, we teach about the process of limitation, where you can limit all that. I know some of this may sound, you know, a little too complex for some of the listening, but I'm telling you, it's simple. We have to change the monetary system. You know, it's just a lot. We have to begin to we no longer can continue to find the easy way out. You know, when they were talking about defund the police, everybody jumped on board. Defund the police. See, that's an easy way out. You know, everybody jumping on the same bandwagon. And that's just easy. We have to really put our foot on the gas pedal and begin challenging, you know, those in power and letting them know that we understand and we have learned the system in which you design is the old system. You know, I remember, I'm going to say this and I'm going to let you guys go. I remember watching a video of Louis Kelso, and it was back in 1983, and he said, you know, a couple of years before he did that interview, that the high-up elites met on the Rockefeller stage, and they met around with the topic of the system is not working for us. What do we do? And the Rockefellers paid millions of dollars to all these economists to go out and try to figure it out. I'm telling you, today, they're having that same meeting saying, this system is not working. We got to do something. And what I'm telling you, listen, Lord, we've got to step up to the plate and start making demands on the monetary system be changed, because this bubble is about to burst. And it's going to impact all of our lives.
Yeah, I think
also
that,
too, I just think that we also need to keep in mind that we still, with the power to vote that people died for, that you have to hold your politicians accountable. You have to demand that your local politicians, your mayors, your senators, your congressmen, that say they represent you in Washington, you have to demand that they take a look at this legislation and how it's going to benefit their area that they say that they represent. And people are trying to get voted in. We got people who've been in Congress since Moses was a baby, and they don't want to give up their seat. You have to put this in their hands and say, hey, our community demand that you take a look at this legislation. All we need is 15 or 20 congressmen to take this on and say, we demand this on behalf of the people. And that would get the attention that we need in Washington to get this legislation passed in all 50 states.
Yeah,
all
and
right,
we're giving
I'm
them
done.
Something to we're giving them something to vote for, because this last election that we just had, it was only 23% voters showed up at the polls. 23%. That's bad. What did that tell you? Instead of politicians going back and analyzing that, you know, their problems, their victories, but people like me, I'm sitting back saying, we got a problem. The young are not participating in the political process. Middle adults are not participating in the political process. Why? Because they have given up on the system. But now we're bringing something to them that they can fight for. They can be proud to go register and vote. They will vote for a candidate. We also, we've got a vehicle called the Unite America's Party that is built around these concepts and these ideas. Queen, you've always said, from DOSBSJ and its partnership with CSJ, here we've got to birth new leaders.
That's
the
right.
The old system and the conventional way of thinking, all they talk about is, when you listen to them, really, it makes me want to throw up. Because everybody's talking about health care for all, affordable housing. Is that all you guys got? They're doing the same thing, and they following the same approach that they did after the Great Depression. Same thing, nothing different. Well, go ahead, Dawn.
Inspiring and uplifting to hear both of you speaking. And I think, Queen, you're putting your finger on the political aspect of this, that, you know, what we do have is the power to vote. It's not sufficient, but we have to use it. And I think, you know, Gene points out that we have something positive to offer. We have a plan. We have a piece of legislation. And it's just a lot of this can already be done. It's a matter of focusing on the specific things that need to be changed. And I think the point about focusing on the money system, if you see the connection between power, property, and money, those basic things, that will tell you where to, you know, to find out where the system is creating barriers and how to take the barriers down. And, you know, the idea of, Jim was saying, for example, the idea of limitation, that's in terms of the system, that is just saying that you can't allow anyone or anything to monopolize power and ownership. So if you look at the money system, that is the key to both making sure that no one has such control over the money system that most people or anyone can be denied equal access and equal opportunity to become an owner. So that limitation is not to say that we're going to take anything away from you, but you can't control the future. You may not monopolize the future or future opportunity. So it's also in the money system, and this is already built into what our central banking system, that's the Federal Reserve, what it was created to do. It can equalize opportunity in the future for people to become owners of income-producing capital. So it's in the money system that Norm would just love to see this. Just a side story. For 10 years, we would have a rally in front of the Federal Reserve building in Washington, D.C. And you have this huge, it looks like a Greek temple. I mean, it's gigantic. And you have police marching in front of it. And our little group, Center for Economic and Social Justice, every year we would gather and we'd have signs and we'd be giving speeches. And this is in front of the Fed. And it was funny because there'd always be more police outside than us. But this was something that Norm was involved in 1979 with bringing the farmers at that time. This was, I guess, there was an embargo on selling grain, I guess, to the Soviet Union. So it had a negative impact on U.S. farmers, who are also being hit by very high interest rates for borrowing, and farmers have to borrow every year. So they had, American Agriculture Movement had organized a tractor cave to Washington, D.C., and they brought in, they drove in 450 tractors, which camped out in front of the Congress and the Capitol building. So they're out on the mall, and Norm was able to meet with the leaders. Tommy Kersey was one of the people. And he said, look, you guys are in the wrong place. You should be protesting in front of the Federal Reserve, because that's where, you know, interest rates are determined. So he was able to convince them and this was something, a little side history, Marion Barry, who you may be familiar with, he was mayor in D.C. for many years, and he had known of Kelsey's ideas also before he was mayor. In any case, Norm and the head of the American Agriculture Movement met with him, and I guess his deputy, Ivanhoe Donaldson, to say, the farmers will leave peacefully, but you have to allow them one last demonstration, and that's at the Federal Reserve. So the mayor agreed, and the chief of police in D.C. agreed, and so they said, only 150 tractors, you know, we'll let you do this if you leave peacefully. So it came the day for the tractorcade, and they had been encircled by buses, so they couldn't get out. The buses opened up, and then, as Norm described, it was like with Moses. The sea came through, the waters parted, and 450 tractors surrounded the Federal Reserve building. And it was a spectacle, and they had a meeting with people at the Fed, but it didn't change anything for many reasons. One is that you needed all the people involved in this protest to understand what they were asking for, and to have the legislation, and to meet at the top level. So every year, starting in 2005, we would have our demonstration with the idea we needed at least, you know, the same kind of same impact as 450 tractors surrounding the Federal Reserve. So Norm's dream is to have that million man march or million person march around the Federal Reserve, and I think also each of the regional Federal Reserves. And that will, if we present them, this is our demand. It is in the Economic Democracy Act, which happens to be one of the two bills that Carla May introduced. One was signed into law, the other will be reintroduced, was a state resolution by, this is for every state legislature, to call upon the U.S. Congress to demand that the Federal Reserve use its existing powers to do what we say in the Economic Democracy Act. So, Queen, I know you have said, talked about the need for every state, every one of the 50 states, to adopt these two pieces of state legislation in order to influence and to make that demand to the U.S. Congress and the White House. And when we Correct. Have that, you know, it is to demand. The Federal Reserve, we've had meetings with the presidents of several feds, with people in the community development department, and none of them can say what's wrong with this. But they will all say, you know, make us do it. In other words, Congress has to say, they're now going to use their power in this way, not just to save, you know, bail out too big to fail banks, but to do it to monetize new growth in the economy in such a way that every citizen has the ability to become an owner of the things that are going to create these new goods and services.
Yeah, Queen just mentioned that. Queen mentioned something last night, Dawn, that if the Black Caucus don't hear us, what we're going to do. But I'm going to go somewhere else. She was talking about that and, you know, making them do it. But I replied to her, we got a legitimate case. We got a case. I mean,
Biden just sent $3 billion over to Ukraine yesterday. I mean, nothing, you know, against the Ukrainian people. They need the help. The country needs the help. But before that, $30 billion, you're creating all this money, you know, printing all this money out of thin air. We're not asking to print money and give to us. What we're asking is just give us the opportunity to have equal access to some of the wealth of this country. We're not talking about take from those who have it, and we're not begging. We're not asking you to give us a handout. We're just asking for a basically fundamental human right. Just give us access. That's it, an opportunity. That's all we ask for. And I think that we've got a legitimate case.
Exactly. And, you know, Gina, you said that. This is like, you know, and I want to go back to the CLDC. That isn't even the main way we would enable every citizen in this country to become an owner of future capital, but it is an essential step in this vision, and this is proving how you can have equal capital ownership opportunity with access to the commercial banks and to the Federal Reserve, the St. Louis and Kansas City Feds. So what this project that we're now just starting, I mean, we got the law signed, you know, it's now on the books. However, this is a critical time, and, you know, we want to send a message out to Carla May and to all the politicians and to the governor. You know, we have to do this right. We have to have people on this governor's commission who understand this idea, who are committed to the goal of equal ownership opportunity, and using an essential means that will address, you know, immediate problems in communities like St. Louis. I mean, you've got abandoned properties there. You have crumbling infrastructure. You know, because of this, you know, what business, what new industry is going to want to locate there? We've got to make the land attractive, and also attractive to live in, to have, you know, high quality of life, so that people love to live in those areas, and they see their opportunity and their, you know, their well-being connected to living in St. Louis.
Yeah. And
okay. I don't want to forget that Brother Vernon is here. So, Brother Vernon, I want to give you an opportunity to chime in and ask questions or just make a comment.
Well, again, this is great information. I thank you all for laying it out the way that you are. I found, I'm passionate about finding kindred spirits, so you all are definitely speaking my language. And I think Dawn said earlier, I'm focused on how important it is to make this understandable to the average person, because we don't get, you know, we say this is a grassroots movement. If the grassroots don't understand this, they're not going to move. So I thank you all for laying it out the way that you did. What I gather from all that you said is every one of us, everybody who's listening to this, everybody who's interested in something like this, needs to take the time, whether you're going to do an hour a day, whether you're going to do a couple of hours a week, and learn, educate yourself, learn more about this area. And in addition to that, start to build relationships with your local, state, and federal politicians, wherever you can, whatever level you're comfortable with, at least get started in building those relationships where you are. That way we have somebody to take this information, this legislation, these ideas to, so that on that front, they can start making the changes or pushing, because it's going to take multiple efforts and efforts from multiple directions to make something like this happen. So that's what I'm gathering from what you're saying. As you all were talking, I was going to your particular websites. I was going and looking at what you were saying, so I can, you know, understand it as it's being said. And my hope is that, you know, as this spreads to the average person, that it will be put out in a palatable way so that more people can do that very same thing. But this is great. I'm looking forward to working to further the aim and the cause and to see this being made a reality in different cities across this country.
Vernon, yeah. you are a kindred spirit indeed, and we're in Arlington, Virginia, so please come out and visit us, whenever you're able to. I think you put your finger on what we need to do is make this idea understandable to the grassroots so they will move, and we will have the grassroots is what's going to make this change happen.
And, I want people to remember that Newt Gingrich said that politics is local. And that is the most truest statement I ever heard from a politician. So for those of you who may be thinking that this is undoable, you can go to a city council meeting where your mayor was in attendance. And you can just ask for them to just hand them the legislation. And we're going to be producing legislation. State, so we need chapter heads. I'm sorry, that's the wrong language. But we need executive directors of chapters in every state. And in that committee, I'm going to let Brother Gene tell you more about how you can get involved and about what the responsibility of the chapters are and how we can going to seek funding for chapters and how you can seek funding. But we need grant writers, so I'm putting it out there. If you're a grant writer, please go to Dots for ESJ, contact us, and let us know what city and state that you're in, because we need grant writers in every state in the United States in order to get funding for your location. And Brother Gene is going to talk more about what that looks like. But we need those head persons in every state. To start with your mayor. You don't have to be trying to write your senator and go visit your congressman, because your mayor has access to those people. And you make a demand on your mayor to get that information to the hand of your senator. Make demands on that senator to get that into the hands of the congressman. And not dare, but offer the congressman to put this as a part of even the platform in which they run on. And I'm telling you, once we start galvanizing those people, you're going to see a change, I promise you. All right, Jim.
Yeah, and Queen mentioned something about what Newt Gingrich said. Your politics starts at your local. And the reason Newt Gingrich said that is because your local and state government has a separate constitution than the federal, okay? So what city governments, what they have to do is, and you're finding they're becoming separate from federal government, not separate in the sense that they're separate. So what they have to do is they have to come up with more their own innovative ideas on how to the betterment of their own city and their own state. That's what we're coming with. We're living in a world of evolution. So what does that mean? If the world is evolving, you come up with more ways and new ways. God said, I come to make all things new. So what does that mean to us as humans? We have to come with a new paradigm for this time and this time and what must be done. I mean, we can't continue to operate in a whole system within an evolving, community. We have to become innovative. And I mean this, y'all. I haven't seen anything out there that's better. If somebody show me something better that would bring equality every city, somebody show me something better, I'll quit this thing in a minute and come join. We have to get into America's
problem, if not all America's problem, is based on economics. We have to change the monetary system. But what Queen was saying, you know, and what Dawn was saying is that, you know, about the tractors coming into Washington, you know, protests, we have to make demands. I mean, when Lyndon Johnson told Martin, make me do it, you know, about everybody just, you know, getting to understand and what Bernie was saying, everybody just taking an hour to get to know this new paradigm that we're into. This is the dawn of a new era, you know, to get to know it and not just to become a member of GOSFE, ESJ, or CESJ, a high school student, middle school student, even kids, they will get the understanding to benefit their lives going forward. They'll know what money is. They'll know how the economic system is set up. They'll know what the GDP is. We don't know the gross domestic product. We don't know what that is. We don't know what economics is. We don't know what binary economics is. It's two systems acting together, what I consider a synergy. Two systems coming together to produce one product. That's all we're doing. That's all we're dealing with here. Two systems coming together to build one product. And that's what we have to do. Come together to on one accord with the Economic Democracy Act, making it a demand, and the Citizen Land Development Co-op set up in all urban and rural areas. It's needed. The politicians don't have an idea. They don't have any plans. All they're doing is looking for outside investors, public-private partnerships called TIF funds, you know, all that. All that's got to stop. It is not enriching the lives of the citizens and the people that make up this system. It's not enriching the lives. But DOSBESJ, you can go on our website, you know, you hit the link, join, and tell us what some of your skills are. We're going to start educating the community here. And St. Louis is like the pilot. I mean, we want everybody to take what we do in St. Louis and replicate it in your city. We're building a model here. And what better place to do it than the heart of America? You know, if you see Jesus, he's always bearing his heart to the world because he was not filled with guile and deceit. And a lot of what they put before us on TV is just lies and deceit because they're not talking. Whenever you hear a leader or politician that's not talking about economics and capital ownership and broad-based ownership, ain't no need even listening to him because he's coming with a conventional wisdom. But here in St. Louis, if you go and look at the history of St. Louis, this is where it all started. St. Louis and Missouri is the hub of racism. They had, during the Civil War, more of the artillery, the most artillery was provided by Jefferson Barracks here in St. Louis. The Dred Scott decision of 1857, the McIntosh lynching where Francis McIntosh was burned on a tree right down in downtown St. Louis. You talk about Tulsa Massacre, we had a massacre right here in St. Louis, Mill Creek Valley, where they burned out 20,000 residents out of their homes, set them on fire, bombed them, and those residents was forced to flee their homes and move to the Ville, and they did it to commercialize downtown. Pueonago Project, downtown St. Louis. Pewitt was for blacks. Ago was for the white residents. They did a biological chemical experiment over Pueonago, and most of those people that I know today who were raised up in the Pueonago have problems, illnesses, cancer, mental illness. So St. Louis is the perfect place. It's the heart of America. The heart is what pumps blood to the body. St. Louis, we want it to be the hub and the heart that pumps life and be a beacon of light to the rest of the world. So, yes, go to our website, hit the join link, tell us what your skills and talents are, how you want to help, I mean, we've got to change the system, and particularly the monetary system.
Okay, and Gene, could you expound a little bit on those people who are interested in starting chapters and what that responsibility entails?
Yeah, well, starting a chapter for DACRIAS, Jay, we love that. You know, I think we'll start having our community meetings probably every third Wednesday of the month. We'll start having a community meeting where we can all come on virtual and share ideas. But starting the chapter, I'm in the process now putting together, you know, standard operating procedures on, you know, how to run a chapter, the do's and the don'ts, and things, the guidelines in place. But yes, we encourage people to want to start chapters, but we first recommend that you go through Justice University and also go through the Justice University curriculum on a community level so you can get a clear understanding of what we're all about. I think I may put in there some requirements before. Of course, there'll be some requirements for starting a chapter, but I probably, you know, put in there that I want you to really explain and do a presentation to our board to make sure that you have a clear understanding of what we are and what our main objective is, because it's so easy to get diverted to doing something else. We don't want people coming in here with their own personal agendas and things like that. We've got to change the money system. We've got to change systems and policies within social institutions. And we also have what we call the Council of Community Boards. You can set up a Council of Community Boards within your chapter, which consists of 9 different advisory councils. Now, DACRIASJ is not the overseer and the director, per se, of that Council of Community Boards, but we would just have an equal share vote, just one vote, in how the councils are ran. And if you look at those 9 councils, that's the way of really building and sustaining a decent, safe community. Because if you look at most of the organizations within our community, they're not sustainable. They're here today, gone tomorrow. I mean, look what Black Lives Matter has done. You know, the NAACP, they've been around for hundreds of years, the Urban League. What are they doing? They're not talking about economic empowerment, you know. And you got to start asking yourself, you know, a lot of people go around the world speaking about empowerment. Start asking, is this empowerment or is this enslavement?
And we have about 7 minutes, and I really want to say this. I want to speak just briefly to women, because women, you know, we got power, and we are the ones that are burying our children. I shared this information with Gene. In the city of Houston, 39 black and brown children were murdered in the city of Houston in a 30-day period. For those 39 children, those are generations of people that will never be brought into existence. But you mothers who have to go out there and work and don't have adequate care for your children are latchkey, or they're out there doing whatever they want to do because you're out of the house, or whatever the situation may be. And the gun violence that is erupting in this country, you have to understand that 95% of the gun violence that takes place in this country is all about poverty. It's all about the haves and the have-nots. It's all about people trying to come up, trying to get another day where they can eat, trying to get another day where they can pay their rent, trying to get another day where they can pay their child support, trying to get another day where they can stay out of jail and pay their parole and probation fees. It's all about trying to get economics along with a great decrease of loss of our moral authority. We don't have control over our media. And if you don't have a say in your media, you don't have a say in what your child is being exposed to, which also influences the crime rate. Why does it influence the crime rate? Because I'm watching TV. Because you're showing things that don't seem reachable or feasible for your children to have because they've grown up in poverty all their lives. Not thinking I could ever own a pair of Jordan shoes. Not thinking I could ever own a Michael Kors bag. Not thinking I could ever own a Cadillac Escalade or whatever it is. They don't have any idea of their own potential. This is something that is family-oriented. My father drugged me to every civil rights meeting there was. Every Nation of Islam protest, every Nation of Islam meeting there was. Take your children to the community centers, to the library, wherever you got to go to access this information. This is a family-oriented program. Your children are welcome because they got to come behind you and continue this positive process of ending poverty. And I would like to really see a lot of women, black, white, brown, red, go to DOSforESJ.org and join on with us so that we can help you help yourself. And we're going to talk about maybe how that benefits the criminal element, the penal system, maybe next week. But for those of us as women, as mothers who are losing their children to these streets, it might seem far-fetched, but I promise you this is a resolution to that as yeah. well.
And we got
and any
we
closing
got,
remarks? I'm sorry, Gene.
We
go
got
ahead.
A vehicle. I'm gonna let Dawn go. We got a great vehicle that will transform the prison system, and it's based on the same principle as the Economic Policy Act and the Citizen Land Development Co-op. It's called the Earth Project. But Dawn, I'm gonna let you go on and close out. I know you got to get out of here.
Well, I think you know, Gene and Queen, you said it best. And the only thing I can add is that this is for the young people, this is for families, this is for every person, and we have to put economic power in the hands of every person because that's the only way that every person can be free. I think also that it's going to be the young people who will help lead this revolution. I know they can understand it. I know that this is something that could give them hope that they could create a better future for themselves. And it is a way of strengthening the family. So everything you said, Queen, is what we're striving for, and it's to organize people. And to, as Vernon was saying, make this understandable to everyone, you know, people, the grassroots. And that will mean communicating it in many, many different ways, including through art, through music, through poetry. So we need everyone involved in this, but it's important that you learn the principles because in order to make change, you have to be very clear in what it is you're trying to change to. And we don't want to fall back into the traps of the past. So this is really a great moment, just this show itself. I think in making very clear what it is we all need to do right now, we have the tools, we have the plan, we have the vision. We just need more people coming in and joining our family. So that's all I have to say.
All right.
You're
and
also
Bernie?
CSJ.org. CSJ.org, I'm telling you, is a library. Ton of information. They got downloadable books, you know. It's just a lot of information. It tells you a lot about their accomplishments and things that they have done in the past, you know, working with some of the greatest of all time. You know, it's a library, though. So just fasten your seatbelt because there's a ton of information on that.
Okay, and Vernon, this is your first time with us, so share with us some insight on what you're thinking right now.
I will just say this. We've got work to do. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan told us that we have talked too much and done too little. So that means it's time to go. Let's get to it. I'm ready. Dawn, I will definitely be reaching out to you soon. Queen and Jean, you know I'm on board. Put my name in your top five, because when it's time to make a move, you can call on me and you can count on me.
We're blessed.
Okay.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you definitely next week. Of course, we'll let you know the time. So thank everybody for joining us, and have a good day, everyone. One nation, one love.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war's not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Right now.
Hello, this is Daniel, the Black Talk Media Project. And in this particular video, I'm going to show you how to import your podcast into the platform Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is the world's number one in terms of traffic of digital radio and podcasting platform. There is no other platform that's getting as much traffic as they are. Now, in terms of Black Talk Radio, which is a platform that the Black Talk Media Project created in 2008, we have the largest black independent digital radio and podcasting platform. Now, I had a client, someone I was talking to that I was hoping would bring his content to Black.